This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. A small West Virginia town is grappling with a wastewater system that has raw sewage running through yards and streets. As Glynis Board reports, it's a far too common problem for many Ohio Valley communities struggling with small budgets and big infrastructure needs.
Kimberly Shatney lives just outside of Pine Grove, West Virginia, an incorporated town of about 500 people with a big problem. Behind a small sub shop in town, she points to the ground, caked with what looks like dry mud.
A lot of it's dry. This was all raw sewage. That's what all this is right here. All of that, All this is raw sewage.
Shatney says a few days ago, employees here had to use a port-a-john across the street, and a stream of raw sewage ran behind the shop. It also ran through yards.
They would have to come out and either walk all the way out in the middle of the road to put the trash here, or if they were in a hurry and they were the only one in the store, they'd just run right straight through, dump the trash in there and go right back out, and then serving fresh food.
The sewage system backs up into yards and basements so often that for many residents, it's normal to use buckets and throw refuse into nearby streams. People in the area also worry that influxes of temporary campers and port-a-johns from oil and gas workers is exacerbating an already taxed system. Unfortunately, problems like these in Pine Grove are common throughout small towns in Appalachia, where communities often lack funding to keep up aging infrastructure. Accurate data on the extent of the problems are hard to come by. A 2005 report commissioned by the Appalachian Regional Commission found that in the few places where careful surveys have been done, substantial numbers of people have failing on-site systems or no wastewater treatment systems at all. The report detailed how small town utilities are more likely to have shrinking customer bases, low-income customers, and a rapidly changing tax base due to the declines in the coal industry. None of this is news to Tracy Nolan, Community Outreach Director for Redbird Mission, a faith service organization based in the remote southeastern corner of Kentucky since 1921.
We keep coming up against the issue of straight piping and no access to city sewer and the families that cannot afford to put in septic systems.
A straight pipe basically means untreated sewage goes directly into local waterways. Nolan and others at Redbird worked with the University of Tennessee to measure the contamination of water sources. More than half of the test sites exceeded health levels for E. coli bacteria. Springs and wells many people use to gather drinking water also had E. coli. Nolan's been working with partners to find and win grants to provide more septic tanks.
It's just a community taking care of ourselves, working with all partners with respect, and just not sitting back and waiting.
Back in Pine Grove, West Virginia State Senator Charles Clements toured the community. He hopes to facilitate more conversations like those in Kentucky, as well as seek out other innovative solutions to rural sewage challenges.
This community deserves more than to be like a third world country.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Glynis Board in Pine Grove, West Virginia.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. A new study has found that strong statewide firearm laws are associated with lower firearm suicide rates, as well as a lower overall suicide rate in the state. Kara Lofton reports.
The study was published earlier this month in the online Journal of the American Medical Association. Researchers analyzed data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They found that strong firearm laws were associated with lower firearm suicide rates. Today, the Violence Policy Center, a nonprofit that advocates for gun control, published their own analysis of the same data, ranking states with the highest gun suicide rates. West Virginia ranks fifth. In 2015, Business Insider used the results of a study published in the Journal of Injury Prevention to rank each state by the percentage of residents who own guns. West Virginia is third. The new JAMA article concluded that strong state firearm policies were associated with lower suicide rates, regardless of other state laws, and that strengthening state firearm policies may prevent suicides by firearm. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
The solar industry is a relatively new player to the region's energy landscape. During its infancy, making a career in it was a bit of a gamble, but Hal Saville decided to give it a go.
It was something that I had to convince my family was the right thing to do, because I had a pretty cushy job and could have retired from doing that. And it was, you know, the industry was somewhat slow to get on its feet and really gain momentum.
Saville works as a commercial energy project consultant for Energy Independent Solutions. He helps develop and sell solar panel systems like the one that just went in at the Forest Hills Municipal Building near Pittsburgh. For State Impact Pennsylvania's Voices of Energy series, Saville shares his story as a crew finishes installing the system's wiring.
How's it going? Are we able to come up and join you guys up there?
Yeah.
Okay. This is where the rubber meets the road. I've actually been interested in solar for over 30 years. And back in the mid-80s, went to school at Penn State for solar and architectural engineering. But there was really no solar market at the time. So I had a totally different career path. Sort of got to the point where I could quit my job in IT and work for a solar company, you know, that was just getting started. I definitely was nervous, and it was a big leap of faith. I'll go out and I'll meet with the clients early on, discuss what their needs are, and kind of understand what they would be interested in, and that allows me to make a recommendation. And then based on that recommendation, if they decide to go forward with it, we put together a formal proposal. So for this building, for example, we started out with this drawing that came from the architect that showed the area on the roof that they wanted to utilize for solar. But then also on the inside, you have to fit where the different mechanicals are in the building and make sure that everything fits.
Yeah. We have another pipe dropping.
So are you coming through that space where all the other mechanicals are?
I do not. So we already plumbed our main line.
Coolest part of my job is getting a call from somebody saying, I'm ready to go. And sometimes that happens relatively quickly. I mean, I meet somebody who's like, they've been thinking about this for a long time, and they finally decided to check it out, and they've talked to us, and maybe they've talked to some other companies, and they've selected us, and they said, we're ready to go. And then I have other people, I just signed a contract this past week with somebody that I've been talking with for 4 years. And I met at one of these home show events, and we've kept in touch, and you know, they weren't ready, and there were other things going on in their lives, and then eventually they got to the point that they said, yes, you know, now we're going to go and do this. I try to keep things on a politically neutral basis and focus on the environmental benefits, but also on the financial benefits. And frankly, those two things are similar. I mean, when you talk about somebody being conservative and talk about conservation, they're from the same root word of to conserve. So I'm kind of all about trying to find that middle sensibility.
That was Hal Saville. His story was produced by Amy Sisk for State Impact Pennsylvania, a collaboration between WHYY, WITF, WESA, and the Allegheny Front to cover the region's energy economy. To hear more voices of energy, visit State Impact Pennsylvania online. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. It's 7:53. In the weather forecast for West Virginia, today and tomorrow, we're expecting variable cloudiness, warm and humid, with a chance of showers and thunderstorms mostly during the late afternoon or evening hours. Highs today will be in the upper 70s and 80s. Highs tomorrow in the upper 70s and 80s as well. Tonight, partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers. Lows in the mid-60s to the low 70s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Bowles Rice, a full-service law firm representing businesses and individuals throughout West Virginia and the surrounding region since 1920. Have you ever wondered if something in the environment near your home could be making you sick? On an upcoming episode of Inside Appalachia, we'll hear about a community in Fayette County, West Virginia, where residents are worried that a toxic chemical is causing people in their community to get cancer. Here's host Jessica Lilly with a preview of this episode.
In some ways, Minden's story is like that of a lot of towns across our region. It's a small, tightly knit community, and when you drive along the winding main road, you see small two-bedroom homes pushed up against the hillsides. There isn't a business in sight. Some homes look abandoned. Several have burned to the ground. For years, the town's economy relied on the coal industry. Miles of underground, abandoned mines lie throughout this holler. But Minden also has something else beneath its surface, a toxic history it can't seem to get away from. Back in the 1970s and 80s, a company in Minden called Schaefer Equipment rebuilt electrical substations for the coal mines. When the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, inspected the site, they found that the company had stored several hundred pieces of this machinery underground. What's more, the oil inside the equipment contained a harmful chemical called polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs. The EPA confirmed elevated levels of PCBs in the soil and along the drainage of a creek running through town. In 1984, the federal agency's Superfund program found the land to be contaminated by hazardous waste and identified as a candidate for cleanup because it posed a risk to human health or the environment. Since then, the federal government has spent millions removing the PCBs from Minden soil, at least three different cleanup actions in all. But some local residents are convinced that the contamination is still underground, harming the health of their community. They're asking the EPA to put their community on the Superfund National Priorities List, which is a way the agency prioritizes sites for cleanup. One of the biggest fears is that environmental contamination is causing a spike in cancer deaths in the community. Roxy Todd has been speaking with residents in Minden to find out why they feel so strongly about this issue.
As I drive through Minden, I see dozens of bright yellow signs in the yards that read, "PCBs kill communities." Outside one white and gray wooden house, there's a giant sign along a chain-link fence. This sign says, "PCBs killed my wife. Who's next?" I pull over to talk to the man who lives here. His name is David Miller. He lost his wife last year. She died of lung cancer the day before the 4th of July. While everybody was enjoying cookouts and fireworks, he was preparing funeral arrangements. They were married for 38 years.
Oh, I love her to death. We were teenage sweethearts. She was my soulmate, you know, really.
Miller admits that his wife also smoked cigarettes, but she was a light smoker. He says he isn't entirely convinced that PCB contamination was the cause of her cancer. But lately, with the local community talking so much about the issue, he's been thinking a lot about his wife and wondering if exposure to PCB may have been the reason behind her death. With so many of his neighbors dying of cancer, he's concerned that contamination is harming people.
You can't tell me there's not nothing going on down here with PCBs. I mean, you know, the amount of people that's passed away down here with cancer.
And if someone said to you, thinking these things, why don't you just leave? What do you say to that?
Well, I own my home. And everybody says, you'll just leave. Well, I'm disabled. I live on fixed income. I can't afford rent. In an apartment, you couldn't give a house away in Minden right now. Nobody'd want to buy a house down here, you know, with all this PCB stuff going on.
This is the story for so many residents in Minden. Most are retired or are approaching retirement. All of the people I spoke to said they own their own homes and they don't have the financial means to leave. Miller says no matter what the EPA or the government officials say, he believes people here are getting sick because of the PCB contamination.
I don't know, that's just my opinion. As my wife I lost. I was married to for 38 years. Yeah, I got an opinion. It might not amount to much, but I got one. You know, said I'm the one sitting here by myself now, so they can think what they want to think.
That was Minden resident David Miller speaking with Roxy Todd. You can hear more of this episode about Minden and about Superfund sites in Appalachia on this Sunday's episode of Inside Appalachia. We'll also listen to more from this series tomorrow here on West Virginia Morning. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Chuck Anzalevich.